At the Commonwealth Policy Foundation, we try to approach the issues of life, marriage, religious liberty, and fiscal integrity from a biblical perspective that promotes thoughtfulness and kindness. We work with political leaders and concerned citizens from all across the state. To stay informed, visit commonwealthmatters.org and sign up for our e-newsletter. The Commonwealth Policy Foundation is a nonprofit organization that only exists because of friends like you. Thanks for tuning in to The Commonwealth Matters.
Welcome to the Commonwealth Policy Center's Legislative Forum. I'm Richard Nelson, Executive Director of CPC, and joining me on this program is Kentucky's junior senator, Rand Paul, to talk about election reform. Senator Paul, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Hey, it's so good to hear from you. You have been traveling the country and speaking on this topic of election reform. Could you tell us what's prompted you to take up this cause, and also what kind of response are you getting from the people that you're speaking to?
You know, when you look at the last election, the thing that struck me was that you had people creating new election law that were not part of the state legislature. So in Pennsylvania, they changed the deadline for receiving ballots from November 3rd to November 6th without the approval of the state legislature. You had secretaries of states in Georgia, Pennsylvania, and Michigan mailing applications to vote to people. You had election officials on a local level in Wisconsin saying that an absentee ballot didn't have to have an address. All it needed was a name on it. And typically those ballots would have been thrown out. The bottom line, the biggest problem we had was election law was being altered by people who were not in the state legislature and not by a majority of the state legislature. So I wanted to fix this because I think it's important going into 2022 that we look at election law. And so I've encouraged them in Kentucky to look at this and try to make the law such that we know exactly what the law is, that only people who are supposed to be voting vote, that people only vote once, that dead people don't vote, that illegal aliens don't vote. There's a lot of things we can do. And even in Kentucky, we have an example of where, you know, when Alison London Grimes was Secretary of State for 8 years, she would never purge the rolls, the voting rolls of illegal voters. The potential is if you leave illegal voters on there, someone could manipulate the system and actually vote for these illegal voters. So I think we're doing a better job in Kentucky, but I still want legislation in Kentucky and other states to make sure that the next election is secure.
Sure. And of course, you recently spoke in front of a state legislative committee. A Kentucky Public Radio news story had this title, Senator Paul. It said, Kentucky lawmakers discuss mystery election bill supported by Rand Paul. And that was and I got a kick out of that. It sounded a little ominous, but that was, of course, in response to your testimony before that committee. Jennifer Decker, a state representative from Shelby County, was the sponsor of that bill. But just that title made it sound secretive and a little ominous. But tell us a little bit more of the goal of that legislation that you came to talk about.
You know, I think one of the reasons they may have said it was mysterious is because I also, when I testified, said that there were certain principles we ought to look at, but that the details, obviously, the state legislators themselves would have to figure out in the bill. And so I sort of outlined the problem as I saw it as a constituent. I'm both an elected official and a constituent to my state senator and my state representative. But the big thing is I was concerned that when the courts looked at the cases in Pennsylvania and Michigan, they said, well, the law doesn't say you can't mail applications or can't mail ballots. So therefore, the court says you can. That's sort of a topsy-turvy world. It traditionally was held the governments can't do anything we don't empower them to do. If the government doesn't have a law saying they can do something, they're forbidden from doing it. The court turned this on its head and said, well, nobody told them they couldn't, so therefore they must be allowed to. And so one of the points I made is that when we look at law now, we can't be concerned or content that we just didn't give them the power. We have to explicitly say, no, we did not give you the power to mail applications to vote or to mail ballots. And we really want to stop what's called ballot harvesting. This is where either a liberal or a conservative group mails out millions of applications, and then they take them to your house, then they bug you, then they pick up the ballots, and then they take your ballots in for you. This has been done in nursing homes sometimes to people who maybe weren't competent to do it, and groups come in and then manipulate their vote. So I think an application should be an individualized process. If John Smith wants to vote and they're unable to go to the polls, they should either type their name in and their identifying information or their driver's license picture and get a ballot for themselves. I'm not against absentee ballots, but it needs to be legitimate. But the other thing we need to acknowledge is that inherently mail-in votes are less secure than in-person votes. So we really should have most people coming in person. Traditionally, we'd have 95% of the people come in person. Because of the pandemic, people got to this idea that, oh, we're going to let people vote at home because we're worried about them. I don't think there was any evidence that anybody got infected by going to vote in person. When I went, it was well spaced out, and I think we did a pretty good job in Kentucky. But we got to go back to in-person voting because it's much harder to cheat. If you have a Republican and a Democrat sitting at a desk and there are 2,000 people in the precinct and 1,500 people show up, you've got 1,500 people, you should have 1,500 ballots. Someone looks you in the eye, looks at your driver's license, you check in. I think it's hard to cheat on in-person voting, but it's much easier to cheat if it's by mail. And so we should have mostly in-person voting.
Now, of course, Kentucky, about a year ago, tightened its voter ID laws. There was a mandatory voter ID bill passed that said if you're going to show up at the ballot box, you've got to prove that you're the actual person there. And just in about a 12-month period, there was a complete reversal, as you just explained. I want to press in a little bit further about the there's two things. One is the courts taking it upon themselves to modify election law. We should know just Constitutional Law 101 says that the legislature has authority to change the laws. It's not the courts, but I guess maybe that's a reminder that all of us need.
Absolutely. I think you're absolutely correct on that. Only the legislature should be able to change laws. But the other problem we had during the middle of the pandemic was we had officials in government who were not the legislature usurping power. The governor's been doing it in our state for a full year or more. And so the legislature came in and stripped some of these powers. And even in that bill, they took back some of the election law to say the governor can't write it, Secretary of State can't write it. So really, this is about the separation of powers and making sure that laws are passed both by the state legislature, signed by the governor. But, and I'm not blaming our Secretary of State, but in some states, the Secretary of State actually assumed that they could create law, and then the courts didn't stop them. This is a big, big deal. And so I think the best thing we can do is to, at the state level, look at election law, and Kentucky's doing it this time. And so I'm a big fan of trying to get this fixed. If we don't fix it in Georgia and Arizona, I think the next federal elections will be difficult to win if there's illegal changing of the election law.
I recently learned that state governments, the state legislature or the Secretary of State, does not have the authority to remove non-citizens from their voting rolls. I was alarmed to hear that. I thought that it was, first of all, the constitutional right of states to determine who would vote in its elections. But just the fact that non-citizens are allowed to vote at least across the country, this is based on a court ruling from a couple years ago. Is there any effort, Senator Paul, to fix that in Congress right now?
Well, I think once again, it'd probably be done at the state level. And my hope is that when we do purge rolls, that we do purge them of any illegal voter. I don't know that there is an actual law or court case that you can't. If there is, we'll have to look and see. But I'm glad you brought this up. And we'll talk with the folks we know in the state legislature today and make sure that illegal aliens can and should be removed during the traditional voting purge. I know there are some federal rules saying you can't purge voters within a certain period before the election. So the state law has to adhere to some of that. But I'm not aware that they can't purge illegal aliens. And if there is, we'll look at it. Unfortunately, at the federal level, we don't have the votes to do anything good. Everything that's going to happen in Washington the next 2 years is going to be us trying to defend you from bad things happening. And so I don't think we'll get anything positive out of here, but we control the legislature in Kentucky. So let's look at that, and I'll see if we can find an answer for you.
And I appreciate that. And I actually learned that from a top official in Kentucky. And again, That's the kind of thing, I think, that frustrates voters when they hear that kind of thing, just that non-citizens are allowed to remain on a state's voter rolls. It just is beyond common sense. And I'm not, look, I know you're not against legal immigrants. I'm not against legal immigrants, but we do want to make sure that the people who are voting in our elections are registered U.S. citizens, Kentucky residents in our case. And if you don't have that, then you have this question of who did vote. Are the results legitimate? And I want to go to pivot over to the need for people to believe that the election was done in a fair and proper manner. Can you respond to that? I mean, you're talking to people across the country, and this is a cause that's near and dear to your heart. But can you just speak briefly on the need for people to believe in the election results?
Well, it's part of, you know, it's part of having peaceful transfer of power is that people believe the election was honest. And I think there are people who do doubt that the election, the previous election, was honest. And so we have to fix those things. I do think that the only way to do it is to look forward. You can't look backwards. And so when we look at the last election, we have to say what went right, what went wrong, and how do we fix it? And we have significant power at the state legislative level to fix a lot of these problems. In Washington, none of them can be fixed because the Democrats want to go the opposite direction. Nancy Pelosi has a bill, House Bill 1, which would federalize all election law, take over the elections from the states, have automatic registration, and have all of it done by mail. So that's a recipe for fraud and disaster and distrust and acrimony and disunity in the country. But I think at the state level, we have a great ability to still fix things and make sure the elections are honest. And I think we did relatively good in Kentucky, and I think we can make it better. But there are a couple of other states, like I say, Georgia and Arizona, where we really have to work hard. And the only way we make the election integrity acceptable to all is to be as transparent as possible and have the laws adjusted in the states accordingly.
Yeah, that's good. One last question for you, Senator Paul. When you were speaking in front of the State House Elections, Constitutional Amendments, and Intergovernmental Affairs Committee, State Representative Attica Scott from Louisville asked how Republicans can make sure that they, and I quote, do not contribute to inciting insurrectionist attacks. Obviously, it's loaded. You were on the hot seat when she asked that. But could you respond to that? Of course, she was responding to the January 6th protest of the election certification. But she singled out Republicans, but maybe we can, for the sake of our conversation, just if you could respond to that, because you did have a response to her.
I think the standard on which we judge people has to be the same for everyone. And I think when people look at this objectively, they want the law to be the same for everyone. So I do think the people who committed violence against the Capitol Hill police on January 6th should be punished. People who broke windows and entered illegally should be punished. But I think the same judgment should go to the people who attacked my wife and I on the streets of D.C. after the Republican National Convention. And people will say, oh, you weren't touched. But they were. There was threatening. They would not let us move. They were not listening to orders from the police. And so, yeah, you can't put them in jail for 10 years, but they should be cited. They should pay fines. They should have gone to jail overnight at the very least. But not one of them was arrested or anything done to them. No investigation of the people who attacked us was done at all. No investigation into who's financing them, how they're able to fly, stay in the expensive hotels. You know, if you're burning the courthouse in Portland, shouldn't you at least go to jail if we're going to put the people on January 6th who broke and entered the Capitol in jail? So it just needs to be the same. It's the same with the impeachment. If you want to judge President Trump for what he said, you got to judge Chuck Schumer for what he did to incite a mob that tried to break into the Supreme Court. And if it's not fair, then it's just partisan. It's the same way with the investigation. Nancy Pelosi wants to have a 9/11 style investigation. Well, the 9/11 investigation had equal Republicans and equal Democrats and wasn't a partisan, you know, farce. She wants to make this a farce. And really, probably the most important question anybody could ask about January 6th, other than the people who committed the attack, is why wasn't there National Guard there the day before and the day of? And I think you'll find out that Nancy Pelosi was asked repeatedly for National Guard, and she vetoed it. And when that truth comes out, I'll be happy to have an investigation into Nancy Pelosi, but I'm not going to support some, you know, thing with twice as many Democrats on the commission. That's just going to be a partisan witch hunt. But I think people want fairness. And if it's not fair, I don't think people want to just see a partisan witch hunt.
Yeah, very good. Senator Rand Paul, thank you so much for your work on election reform. God bless you, and hope to have you back again sometime.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Hi, Richard Nelson here with the Commonwealth Policy Center. It's clear that the news media isn't always fair. In fact, there's lots of far-left bias and political gamesmanship. No surprise there. So if you're looking for a perspective that's grounded in the truth of Scripture and our nation's founding principles, then get plugged into CPC's resources. Sign up for our e-newsletter at commonwealthpolicycenter.org. You can also follow us on Facebook at Commonwealth Policy Center. And we're on Twitter at CPC4Kentucky.
Welcome to the Commonwealth Policy Center's Legislative Forum. I'm Richard Nelson, Executive Director of CPC. And on this edition, joining me is Secretary of State Michael Adams to talk election reform. Welcome to the program, Mike.
Thanks. Great to be back, Richard.
Hey, I appreciate you joining us. The legislature is more than halfway finished. A lot of bills that they've been dealing with, but perhaps one of the most important bills deals with election reform. And we were challenged last year by being in a COVID environment in a number of different ways. But election-wise, we had some challenges as well. And I guess I'll start out with this. Was the thing that the things that you learned during the COVID environment, is that what prompted you in your office to get behind House Bill 574 and to work for election reform?
Absolutely. This bill represents months of work with my office and several legislators. The prime sponsor is Representative Jennifer Decker of Shelby County, a former staffer for Senator Rand Paul. Mm-hmm. So we started there. We had months of discussions and meetings and bill drafts. This is really a legislation. It takes the things that we used to enhance security of our elections last year through emergency powers. Mm-hmm. It makes those permanent. Those powers that I have lapsed, and appropriately so. But the things that we did to increase security, mm-hmm. those need to be made permanent by the legislature. So that's why you saw this pass in the House by 93-4 margin. There's consensus across party lines. We want fair elections in our state.
I remember when you were running for office. In fact, you were in the studio back then talking about your campaign platform. And one of your, really the pillar, I think, or what I heard was make it easy to vote and hard to cheat. And I think that's on everybody's minds after the presidential election of last year. There were many allegations of voter fraud in different states. However, in Kentucky, we didn't hear that. Were we just lucky?
Or we were not just lucky.
Tell us more.
Of folks that worked really, really hard. County clerks, poll workers worked really hard to make this a fair and a free election. And that's, I think, part of why we had such high turnout. We had the highest turnout we've had in decades, and that's because voters had confidence in our system. I think they had confidence because we had a new photo ID law that I ran on and helped get passed, but also because we put other implementations in to ensure both access and security. And the voters really responded to that.
Yeah, they did. You obviously, you were elected to be the Secretary of State of Kentucky. You got some things done before COVID hit. And then during the COVID environment, you made some significant adjustments to make it easier to vote for people who couldn't get out, people who were vulnerable to COVID. And yet election integrity was maintained. So I'll say this on a personal level. Good job.
Thank you.
I know there was a lot of work, a lot of long hours that you put into it. And hopefully we'll see the continued effort of ensuring that that our elections are safe, filled with integrity, and fraud-free as to the best that they can be. I want to, before I go into House Bill 574, I'd like to bring up some of the latest news out of Washington, D.C. There is a major effort in Congress that's receiving a lot of attention to federalize elections. And this is an effort that would, it does several things, but a couple of the high points is that it would do away with many of the state laws, including the voter ID laws that we have here in Kentucky. It would make mail-in voting much easier. I think it would actually require ballots to be sent out. Just really loosens the election integrity efforts that many states have made I'm wondering if you might be able to share some of your comments on that effort in Congress.
Yeah, it's very telling that the very first bill Nancy Pelosi brings to the floor, the very first bill, H.R. 1, you can tell from a bill number how important it is to the sponsor. The very first bill they're trying to pass is a bill that makes our lives any better. It doesn't fix any pressing problems our government has. It's a bill to help National Democrats steal elections. They want to come in and they want to repeal at the congressional level all the improvements we've made in Kentucky to make our elections more secure. This is a very anti-democratic, small d, anti-democratic bill. The voters put me in this office because I ran on ballot integrity. And now Nancy Pelosi wants to cancel out everyone's votes here in Kentucky.
And you talk about, you know, if you think about the way the founding fathers set up our government, we have this idea of federalism. You have local, state, federal. And the states really constitutionally are given the authority to determine their own election laws. And yet we're seeing this federal power grab, if you will, where Nancy Pelosi and her fellow Democrats would like to impose on the rest of the country what they've done in California and in some of the other deep blue states.
If I could add here, you can Google this. You can't miss it. The city of San Francisco has spent hundreds of thousands of dollars of taxpayer funds to actively advertise to and recruit non-citizens to register to vote. That's the mentality they have in San Francisco.
So wait, so you're saying that they're actually trying to get non-citizens, people who are not residents or maybe illegal immigrants, to register to vote in an election?
Correct. They just have a different way of doing things out there. And look, I don't like it, but I respect they can do what they want out there just stay out of my state. What I don't want is Nancy Pelosi taking that type of mentality and making it national through a federal law.
One thing I learned recently, Secretary Adams, is that here in Kentucky, you are given much authority regarding election law. One of the things, and I want to go into House Bill 574, one of the things that you're looking to do is to clean up the voter rolls, which says, well, if there are people who are no longer alive or if they've moved out of state, apparently we have many of them on our voter rolls. But one thing I learned was that you do not have the authority to remove illegal immigrants, non-citizens, I guess, off of the voter rolls.
So here's the problem. I've done everything I can possibly do within the powers that I have under the law to get our rolls cleaned up. It's a major issue I ran on. When I ran, I said we have hundreds of thousands of people that we know have moved away or passed away or been put away and they're on our voter rolls. My predecessor was sued in federal court and lost because she refused to even once in her 8-year term of office to get the rolls cleaned up. So I inherited a huge mess. Yeah. I have been very aggressive taking people off the rolls. We've actually had periods we took more dead voters off the rolls than we added live voters. It's almost impossible to do in a presidential election year with the interest you have. Yeah. But we've been very vigorous. Yeah. I feel like we've gotten about as far as we can get with what we have in terms of our authority. But there's a loophole in our state law. Under federal law, we're allowed to take voters off if we see that they've voted in some other state. But under state law, I can't do that. So I've asked the legislature to close that loophole. Every day I get mail from the Secretary of State of Idaho and Montana and Tennessee and you name it, and they say, hey, here's a list of people that just moved into our state and registered to vote and are voting, but we see they just came from your state where they were registered. You should take them off. And I'm like, yeah, but I can't.
Yeah.
If I don't get this relief from the legislature, I have to wait until after the next election in 2022, and then I can do it, but I want to do it much faster.
And, of course, as I understand it, getting back to the question of non-citizens, that's a court rule that it's the federal government's job to remove non-citizens off of Kentucky. Maybe I'm misunderstanding this.
So a federal court ruled that we can't pass a law to require proof of citizenship in order to register to vote.
Okay.
However, I do have the authority by law now to take people that we verify are not citizens off the rolls.
I gotcha.
But I'll put this in perspective. The number of people like that, and even the number of people that are dead and on the rolls, that pales in comparison to the number of people that we know are alive and we know are actually voting, because we've got other states telling us they're voting. They can double vote in Tennessee and Kentucky unless we get them off the rolls in Kentucky.
So what would prevent somebody from being for this law that would empower you to clean up the voter rolls? Should this be a partisan issue? Is it a partisan issue?
I'll tell you this. I don't think it should be. And every single Democrat in the state house voted for this bill. Every single one, all 25 or whatever it is. Okay. Now, that's not an accident. We actually worked really hard on this point. But there's no benefit to one party or the other by having voter rolls that are actually accurate. It makes the line shorter when you go to vote. Yeah. It's good for everybody.
Right. And I think it's in the interest of all people across the political spectrum to make sure that it's a free election, a fair election, that people who should vote or who are on the voting list are actually the ones that are doing the voting. So that is an important provision of House Bill 574. Another thing that it does is it prohibits ballot harvesting. Tell us a little bit more about that.
If you want to, you know, there's two sides on this spectrum. There are people that think every election's corrupt, and I think that's an overstatement. And there are people that think, oh, there's no vote fraud. It's all a myth. That's totally wrong. The truth is in the middle. Mm-hmm. Let me give you a specific example. Just 2 years ago, this is not 20, 30, 50 years ago, just in the last federal election, you had a race for U.S. Congress in North Carolina that was thrown out by the Board of Elections because there was so much corruption through ballot harvesting. No one knows who really won. They had to have a revote. Ballot harvesting is when third parties procure people's cast ballots and deliver them to the election officials. So you don't really see that here, but in Detroit, Milwaukee, Philadelphia, you see it. And that's part of why people don't think that the elections were fair in those states. So what this bill does, under our prior law, the voter has to return the ballot, not some third-party group, but I have no ability to actually enforce that. Mm-hmm. So we actually asked to strengthen that law and to give us criminal penalties that we can go after people that are doing this, if they do it, mm-hmm. and actually put them in prison. So we actually have to go out of our way to make sure this doesn't happen.
Very good. A couple other major provisions, and we're running out of time, unfortunately, but one is that it would transition, require all Kentucky polling places to have paper ballots so that a paper trail would be available if there needed to be a recount.
Exactly.
The other thing is that it extends the voting period to 4 extra days for in-person voting, which tell us just briefly the thinking behind
that. Senator Rand Paul was part of our working group, he and his staff, and he really, and I agree with him, he really wants to press in-person voting as the gold standard. Representative Thomas Massey agrees we need to have in-person voting and reduce the absentee. Well, the best way to do that is to have more than one day for people to vote. There's no other government service that you're limited to one day. What if the unemployment office was only open one day a week? That'd be crazy.
Yeah.
I want people to vote in person, and I want to give them days to go do that. I think it's arbitrary to have one day. Let's have 4 days.
Very good. Secretary of State Adams, I appreciate your good work to ensure election integrity. Best wishes to you as the Senate now considers House Bill 574, and just a few days left in the session, so we'll see what happens with that.
Sure will.
All right. God bless, and you
Thanks
keep up
so
the
much.
Good work.
Thank you.